Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, and back in the saddle, Chris Buchanan. Chris, how you doing?
I am well, Jim. Hello, everybody. Happy to be here. We are finally starting to get some temperatures above 50 degrees here in the Nittany Valley. It's been another one of those sluggish winters lapsing into April that I don't love so much, but things are trending in a positive direction here in Happy Valley and with Penn State football, I think.
It is about time on the weather front, Chris. Hopefully we get reasonable weather for the blue-white. I don't even want to call it a game, the blue-white event.
You know? It's whatever. I understand the trend in the sport is to go away from these spring games, and I think spring ball in general might be in for a dramatic overhaul within the next 24 months as the sport continues to evolve. But I really did appreciate what James Franklin came out and said a few weeks ago now about Penn State's commitment to keeping some kind of an event on that weekend. It's important for the university. It's important for the community. And I just always found it to be a fun way to celebrate Penn State and reconnect with your friends and just have my co-host Kevin Horn, I think, described it accurately as a spring homecoming for the university and for the town. So whether they play an actual blue-white game inside Beaver Stadium has always been secondary to the event weekend itself. And so as long as they're committed to keeping that going, I don't really care what they do as far as the football goes.
See, I actually do care because I actually
because you learned like, so much from the blue-white game over the years. So edifying and informative an event. Like, I can understand that, sure.
No, I don't need to be educated by it, but I want to be entertained by it. And I'm entertained by it being a game, Chris. And
if you are entertained by the blue-white game, Jim, you are a different breed. That well, is hashtag respect.
But it's not, and I said this before, it's not me wanting to see Drew Aller or Nick Singleton. It's me wanting to see Ethan Grunkmeyer play. It's me wanting to see Quentin Martin play. I want to see those young guys. Yeah. And the fifth string walk on running back, we know will be the most valuable player of the game, right? Okay. That's the standard
for sure,
and that's you know, all of a sudden,
to be fair, we're so stocked in the running back room this year that the fifth string guy could end up being somebody who pushes his way to being the third tailback by the time we get to kickoff. There's a lot of talent in that room at this moment.
Well, the funny thing is, as I said, fifth string, I was editing myself in my head. Maybe I should go a seventh string.
Yeah.
And, you know, as always, Chris, I'm so concerned that someone will pilfer that seventh string walk-on running back. So I don't want to play a game because of it. And this is my overall saltiness on a national basis with these coaches. Oh, my goodness, we can't play a game. But on the other hand, you're telling me how important these spring practices are to you. So yeah. Why are you working so hard to take one of these practices, which is the scrimmage? You're telling me there's no value to having your players on, you know, Beaver Stadium turf with a clock running and fans in the bleachers. There's no value to that. There's no value to seeing what your young guys could do in that kind of form. And I'm not buying this. Oh, we risk injury. Well, you risk injury every one of those 15 practices, Chris. So
yeah, look, here's what it comes down to. I've always said that. It's just the paranoid lunacy that runs that profession. Okay, so during spring ball and also during the season, as you're aware, and probably most of your listeners are, the media gets a chance to come in and observe small sections of Penn State football practice. Now, what's funny to me is listening to some of the younger guys on the beat, which is pretty much everyone on the beat at this point, with the exception of a few who I won't name because I don't want them to feel like I'm saying they're old. But it's funny to be listening to them complain about you know, they don't get enough time to observe practice. And I'm cracking up because I can still remember the first time once Bill O'Brien got here, your buddy, and, you know, the email went out that said, like, hey, there's going to be a little open practice time. You can come up once and observe practice. Or, hey, we're going to make a couple players available to you. And everyone, our minds were blown. We were like, what? We're going to be inside Haluba Hall. We don't have to break in, you know? Like, we're going to get to see a little bit of practice? That's crazy. So the access that the media today enjoys to the Penn State football program is night and day compared to what it was during the Paterno era. And again, a subject of the paranoid lunacy that runs the college coaching profession. So when we get in there, every week before you go in, one of the sports information folks comes out, and all respect to these guys, they do a really good job. Again, as somebody who's been dealing with SID dating all the way back to the Paterno era, like, they've never been more open or more accommodating in the media than they are now. So all credit to the staff there. But they give you this little speech about how if you're going to do any filming, you got to be tight in on individual players. They don't want any wide shots. They don't want a view of the entire practice. And inevitably, probably like a couple of the younger kids will do that every week and pop it out onto social media. And then you get admonished afterwards for, guys, no more, yeah, please, no more wide shots. I am not enough of a student of the game to understand how some rival coach could pull a 20-second social media clip of practice, which to the untrained eye just looks like organized chaos, and glean some sort of like important bit of intelligence that they get, they turn around and use against Penn State in the fall. Maybe that's possible. Maybe that's just a total insanity, total paranoia. But I explain all of it, not just to give you a little bit of a look behind the curtain about how this process works, but to say that if James Franklin is worried enough about 10 seconds of a wide shot pan of a practice inside Haluba Hall being potentially some sort of ruinous release of valuable information, then extrapolate that mentality to his notion that, oh my God, we're going to put an entire scrimmage live on the Big Ten network for everyone to watch. And this is the mentality that is prevalent among his peers in the coaching profession. So I totally get it. You can say like, that's insane. And maybe it is, but all I am telling you, this is how these guys think. So when it came to Matt Rhule canceling the spring game, I think the transfer portal and injuries and any of the other excuses that are used, they're all just convenient to the fact that these guys just don't want anybody watching anything they do. And if I'm honest, as a fan, that doesn't even really bother me all that much, because guard this stuff like it's state secrets. It's no skin off my back. I don't really get a whole lot of enjoyment out of watching these stupid little clips that they release out of practice every week, whether they're tight in on one-on-one receiver versus DB battles, or it's an illegal wide shot of the entire practice. Like, I could have none of that, and it would detract from my enjoyment of Penn State football very, very little. So if James Franklin believes that he needs every edge up to and including not letting opposing coaches maybe get a 2-second wide angle pan of Haluba Hall, I go with God, bro, whatever you need.
Well, there is an explanation for it, Chris.
Sure.
And it's the two words you used earlier, paranoid lunacy.
Yeah. And I mean, look, it's widespread. It's like, I'm telling you, no one was tighter with this stuff than Joe. I mean, he treated his practices like Fort Knox. So It's a long-standing tradition at Penn State and most power football programs. So it's just to say that I think the opposition to doing spring games, letting people watch spring games, especially because now everyone can have a camera phone and certainly televising them, maybe it's all completely nuts. And I would say that the odds are probably greater than not that it is. But that's where it's coming from. It's coming from that place of, if I don't have to show it to you, I don't want to show it to you.
And you know what, Chris? I find it mind-boggling to think that if I see if I'm an opposing coach and I see a Penn State spring game, which, by the way, is going to be as vanilla as possible.
Sure.
And if I'm concerned about the other team scouting me and seeing something, well, then I'm going to show them something a little different than what they're going to see come the fall. How tough is that to do? Use it to my advantage if I think other people are scouting and taking something out of it. Not that difficult to do. But again, I think there's benefits to having your team out on the field playing a semi-competitive game. Yeah. If you want to put the red shirt on the quarterback and say, don't touch him, I get it. I really do.
But yeah, look, Alabama and Ohio State and Nebraska back in the day, like every program that was a powerhouse, they were having public scrimmages and being able to see basically the most watered down version of what they had been doing in practice really didn't help anybody beat them come the fall. But like I said, I don't feel as a fan or as a member of the press entitled to any of this. And by contrast, I get way more access than I would have had 25 years ago. So it's whatever to me.
See, I don't look at it.
I like the event weekend. The scrimmage itself is meh.
See, I feel, and I'm going to sound hypocritical here, because I enjoy seeing them play the game, put the scoreboard, light up the scoreboard, play the game that way. But I'm also the guy who, with the real nice weather and a nice tailgate, I've already not gone into the stadium.
Well, that's the thing. And I actually I've enjoyed the tailgate games. Like I'm like one of two people by the time the game is going to kick off at my tailgate that I'm like, hey, I'm actually going to go into this. Everybody else, like, they don't care at all. Not at all. So I actually, on a sliding scale, I enjoy the football more than most, I think. And even I'm saying, like, I don't really care about it that much.
Well, the thing is, though, overall, and I saw this, and I believe it was Alabama's spring event, they did something that wasn't like the standard scrimmage that they typically do, and the fan attendance was way down. So yeah. Obviously, there are a lot of people who do care about it, and it makes me wonder when I keep hearing, well, we're doing it because of the fans. Are you really? So anyway, that's it for quarter number one, Chris. We've got lots more to talk about. Stay tuned. Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? Go PSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out gopsurv.com or call 800-519-8467.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking Penn State football. We're talking about whether or not to have the spring game in some form or another.
And Jim, can I just touch on something you said as we were going to break?
Sure.
You mentioned the attendance being down at Alabama's spring game, and it was way down. I mean, if you were online, you saw contrasting pictures from last year's crowd to this year's crowd. I know our good friends at For the Bloggy have actually been tracking this week to week. Attendance is down across the board at spring games for the big programs. So it is going to be really interesting to see. And of course it'll be weather dependent somewhat what the crowd looks like in Beaver Stadium for Penn State's game. I don't know if you have any theories about why that might be. And certainly some of it might be the changing nature of the games themselves. But I also consider the possibility that, you know, more is not always better. And the college football fan base over years and in many cases decades has become acclimated to a certain amount of that product. And it wasn't that long ago that college football was, yeah, it played 11 games and then you were in a bowl and that was it. And then we started adding the playoff system and conference championship games factored in. And then we expanded the playoffs. And now the college football season is dragging into like the second round of the NFL playoffs. And we've also added this wonderful free agency period called the transfer portal, where when the season ends, you have no idea even who the hell is going to be on your roster by the time the spring rolls around, let alone the fall. And so we're now starting to overload people with more and more college football. It's like Homer Simpson in hell with the donut eating machine. It's like, oh, don't you love more? Don't you want more donuts? Wouldn't you like more college football? I think maybe people just need a little bit of a break. I think there's a little bit of sensory overload going on here.
Well, that's a theory. And, you know, Chris, are we perhaps part of all of it with all of this nonstop coverage from the media, so many outlets? But
by the way, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. There is an overabundance of coverage of Penn State football. And, guilty as charged, I suppose. And in sports in general. Again, I think I enjoyed it all better when there was the morning paper, the morning Sports Center, and Sports Illustrated once a week, and that's what I got.
Well, you know, that's a good segue to what I wanted to talk to you about, Chris, and that I'll let you pronounce the last name, Nico in Tennessee.
Iamaliava.
Nico. That was the big news. And, you know, my first question would be, are we coming to the end of the world with this type of thing? And before you answer the question, let me throw out the opposing theory, which is I'm old enough to remember, again, I'm going to bring up baseball. People are probably tired of it. But many years ago, when free agency was coming about in Major League Baseball, that was going to be the end of the world, Chris. But the fact is, it turned into, hey, it kept baseball in the news year round. And as Reggie Jackson would move from the Oakland A's to the New York Yankees, it made it more popular. He was either the hero or the villain, but either way, you wanted to see him. And, you know, I have a theory that this college football free agency in some ways is actually good for the game. We're talking about it because of Nico being a free agent. And wherever he ends up, I suspect, Chris, that school will probably get more TV coverage than it would have otherwise, because this guy, he's going to turn into a hero or a villain. But either way, he's going to be a story.
Yeah, I think there will be some of that. I think the beauty of football at the professional and the college level is that the sport is bigger than the personalities. So you don't have this sort of like, you know, ESPN is the 24-hour LeBron network. You don't have that effect because the brands and the sport and the pageantry around it are bigger than the personalities. And I think that's really, really good. You get a nice balance. Even when you have a story that catches fire, you know, like Coach Prime in Boulder 2 years ago did. And that was starting to feel like it was getting a little played out, like it was getting oversaturated. And then other stuff started happening in the sport, and you just couldn't sustain the typical, like, ESPN beat the dead horse into a bloody pulp approach of covering a story. So, yeah, I think it's probably true that UCLA, I guess, which is where Nico's ending up, is going to get more coverage, but not to the extent that it's going to be overpowering. To answer your original question, like, no, like, I don't think it's the end of the world. I don't think it's even anything approaching that. Some people may have claimed that. That thought never even occurred to me. So the answer is no. To go back to your baseball analogy, one thing I will say is it's probably fair now, through the lens of history, to comment that over the long term, one of the effects of free agency, whether it was the right thing to do from an ethical or labor law perspective, which it probably was, was erode the relationship between a city slash fan base and a ball club. And I think you can say that that's had some measurable negative effect on the sport. That there is not the intimate relationship between teams and their fan bases that you had prior. Now, I don't think it was ruinous. I don't even know if I would describe it as significant. But if I look at the net effect on baseball, which has unquestionably declined in terms of its national popularity over the last quarter century plus, I could at least put that on a list of contributing factors. So no, I don't think this is healthy for the sport. I think the transfer portal sucks. In fact, if I'm being honest in terms of the product quality, I think I hate college football now. I think I hate going on social media and seeing some quarterback who's never going to play in the NFL has been at four colleges in 4 years. And this is college football. Yeah. Like that guy is going to get used up with one loser coach tricking one loser kid after another, that they're one more stop away from their professional dreams. And then when they're done using them, they're going to chew them up, spit them out, and that's it. And that kid's going to have what? A degree in something that he got from 4.5, 5 colleges in as many years? It's nonsense. No, they got to fix this thing. It can't continue like this forever. Cal, for God's sakes, lost 5 running backs in the transfer portal. You think this is good? I think it's insanity. And I think it stinks. I hate the transfer portal.
Well, see, I think
for a bunch of reasons, none of which is I don't want young men to make what they're worth.
Well, I'll give a little bit
idiotic way to run a sport.
I'll give some of the opposing view here. First of all, I'll start out with baseball. You're a Phillies fan.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Bryce Harper coming to town?
I don't want to overstate it, okay? I don't think like free agency was some catastrophic change in the sport. What I'm saying is that if you look at the business model of baseball, which thrived in no small part because of the intimate an intense relationship between fan bases and their teams, that was watered down over the course of the period of time from the onset of free agency to the present. That's all I'm saying.
And I do get that, but I think it also is an opportunity.
By the way, college football thrives on that more than baseball did, more than any professional sport. So to take it out of the game is more perilous in terms of the business model of the sport than it would be for the NFL or Major League Baseball or any pro sport.
I think some of it is going to be how it's handled, just like in private
industry. And also, Bryce Harper can't, in the middle of the season, decide he's going to go play for the Yankees. I don't have to spend every offseason saying, oh, my God, I hope somebody doesn't offer Bryce Harper an extra $500,000.
But here's the differentiator, though, Chris. Bryce Harper, correct me if I'm wrong, did he not say – he wants the no trade clause. He wants no opt-outs. He wanted to say, I'm part of Philadelphia. I'm going to be here. I'm going to end my career here. Now, not every player does that, but sure. Just the fact that you could differentiate guys who make that kind of commitment versus not, I think can be the differentiator. I'll now relate this to college football. You have a situation at Tennessee where, first of all, Nico was brought there. Why? He went to the highest bidder. And if you remember the whole controversy with him going to Tennessee, it was all about the money. It was transactional. And it's no surprise that 2 years later, this guy puts a gun to the program's head and said, pay me more or I'm out of here. Now, credit Tennessee for saying, fine, go. And now contrast that with what's going on at Penn State. And maybe this is me looking at things with the blue and white glasses, Chris, but I'm going to take a shot at James Franklin later, okay, in the show. But right now, I'm going to pat him on the back. I'm going to compliment him. He's never brought in a transfer portal quarterback. He talks in terms of this is transitional, not transactional, the way we work here. We're going to develop players. We're going to develop young men. We're going to have them going to school. We're going to do all those things the right way. Maybe it's just in contrast to the other schools, but that makes me proud of how Penn State runs their program, Chris. So I think in a way this free agency allows us to differentiate. I have no doubt Drew Aller, Nick Singleton probably could have made more money elsewhere, Chris, and they chose to come back to Penn State. That doesn't make me less inclined to follow Penn State. It makes me more inclined to.
Yeah, well, in your baseball example, all of that player movement that exists happens within a contractually mediated environment, so there can be at least some certainty and stability offered to the fans who care more, frankly, about just rooting for shirts. I think we want to encourage people to care on some level, but the human beings who are part of these teams, especially at the collegiate level. And so, yeah, like I love that Penn State's been able to do that. We talked about that a lot on the Obligatory podcast that just dropped this week. I think it's a real feather in James Franklin's cap that we all ought to appreciate and acknowledge. That said, Penn State was able to differentiate itself long before we had this absurd Wild West system that I think is just, for me, damn near ruining the enjoyment of the sport.
I find I still tune in every Saturday and enjoy the sport just the same, Chris. All right, we've got more to talk about. We're going to do that after this break. I'm sure we'll continue to debate, and I've got a few more things I'd like to throw at you after this break. Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? Go PSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out gopsurv.com or call 800-519-8467.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris Buchanani. I'm Jim Galani. It's quarter number three. Chris, I know you wanted to follow up on our conversation at the end of segment two.
Yeah, and if I can just take it back to actual college football on the field here for a minute, I know that one of the players that Tennessee has been talking to in the wake of Nico's departure is Avery Johnson, the starting quarterback for Kansas State. And let me just posit that I think it's very possible that Tennessee is a more dangerous team in the SEC this season with Avery Johnson as their starting quarterback than with Nico in year two. I think if you look at the deficiencies in Nico's game and you look at bringing in an experienced dual threat guy like Avery and what I think Josh Heupel could accomplish with him, I think it's possible that this whole thing ends up being a net positive on the field for the Volunteers. And so to tie it back to what we were just talking about in the last segment, yes, Jim, I am thrilled and feel myself lucky and count myself blessed. Knock on wood. I am literally knocking on wood here that so far Penn State has not been substantially damaged by the transfer portal era. In fact, I always like to point out that I think the only real serious potential playmaker we lost to the portal was King Mack. And here he is back wearing blue and white after 1 year. I think it's amazing. I think it really does speak to, although it sounds cliche, the culture around the institution and the program and what James Franklin has brought to it during his tenure. I'm glad about all of those things. Nevertheless, I understand that the sport itself thrives on more than just Penn State being good and Penn State fans being happy. There are great college football fans all across this great nation, and there are great college football fans in Manhattan, Kansas. And I think it sucks that Kansas State Wildcat fans are now sitting here thinking like, oh, we might go into our season without a starting quarterback because of this no rules, no guardrails, constant free agency system that is a result, I'll admit, of the people in charge of the sport being an extreme dereliction of their duties for decades. I get it. But I'm just saying the net result for a lot of fans has been to look around college football and say, there, but by the grace of God, go I. So when I see Cal lose five running backs, or I see Kansas State lose their starting quarterback, or hell, I'll even give the greatest example of how I am putting my money where my mouth is. When I see Pitt, who obviously I hate, because F Pitt. When I see Jordan Addison leave there to go to USC, I say, hey, good for him for getting his bag. Good for the kids who are taking advantage of the system. It's don't hate the player, hate the game. But I do hate the game. That sucks. That sucks for any program that doesn't occupy the highest tier for their fans to understand that they're nothing more than the developmental league for the big boys. It can't continue like this writ large. Or it is going to damage the sport. It's going to damage the product with its core base of consumers.
Chris, see, I don't think it will continue to escalate down the path that it's obviously been escalating for the last several years.
Right. And but right now, it stinks.
But it's the correction is starting to happen. The pendulum going the other way. And I think Nico is perhaps the start of that, where it's, here's a guy who Tennessee a couple years ago was ready to spend outlandish amount of money on. He's our savior. He's going to be this great quarterback coming in. And 2 years later, Tennessee essentially is saying, nah, not so much. And I think this might be the lesson for some of the players, that the grass is not necessarily going to be greener. You can't just out and out straight free agency. I think the other part to this is
right. And now, and by the way, the guy's marketability is ruined because he's like a national pariah now.
Exactly, Chris. Exactly. Now, he's not necessarily the quarterback that he thinks he is, but number two, he overvalued himself, but also Tennessee saying, you know what? We could play this game without you. As you pointed out, we could go elsewhere and get someone and actually maybe be a more dangerous team. The other part to the correction to this, Chris, I think is coming, is there's going to be contracts for these guys. And depending on how they do, ultimately, collective bargaining is the answer. Yeah. I'm not sure of the path from here to there. And I don't think it's going to be a straight line. But I think ultimately we're going to get to the point where it's, okay, here's your contract to be at our school for 3 years. If you want Jordan Addison to leave Pitt to go to USC, here's a buyout clause.
Somebody's got to pay that buyout. Yep.
Yeah. So there'll be more of the balance there to it. Whereas if you outplay your contract, there's an alternative. There's a way out. But you have to pay for that. So there's a little bit more of a balance. But it'll also go the other way, Chris. If you underperform, but there's a three-year contract, the university is going to still owe you for the 3 years they signed you for.
Agreed. I think that's an important point. It has to be a two-way street. There needs to be a significant mutual obligation up front. I am all for making the initial commitment process an actual commitment that requires some thorough forethought and rigorous decision-making. But then there needs to be an obligation on the part of the universities that you're committing to us, so we're committing to you. I think that's a really, really important point.
And it's the correct way to do it. It's just, I know it's not about fair or right or any of those things. Yes, it is. It should be that way. It should be a two-way street. And if you're negotiating a contract, it is both sides. And I find it fascinating. No, not fascinating. I find it hypocritical, Chris, when these coaches who are being paid millions and millions and millions of dollars can say, oh, we don't, this is terrible. The players have free agency. When they will abandon their school like that for a couple more million dollars.
Yeah, so I think that argument is overplayed, to be honest. I mean, I just to go back to what you just said, those coaches do have buyouts in their contracts. And I get right. It. Look, there's no honor among thieves. I understand it. And these guys aren't sympathetic figures necessarily. But, you know, we want to try to hold them to some kind of a standard. We would like them to not be total scumbags. Like, they're all kind of scumbags. I get it. But, like, that's maybe just a cost of doing business of being a big-time college football coach. There's no way to do it without it, without a little bit of scumbag behavior here and there. We would like to hold them to some kind of a standard. Well, it's really hard to do that when we say, hey, you've got to be a tactician, you've got to be a salesman, you've got to be a CEO, you've got to be a fundraiser. And oh yeah, by the way, the recruiting process literally never ends. You are on 24/7, 365. And the moment you drop your gaze for only a second, that's when the bag man from somewhere else shows up with an extra mill to try to pull away a key playmaker on your team. Like, if I was doing that job, which I never would because it sounds like a total carnival, I'd be like, yeah, you're damn right. You're going to be paying me millions of dollars to do this.
And that's fine. Supply, demand, all of that. Let them make their money. I just think it's a little hypocritical of them when they are so offended by players doing the same thing that they've been doing for years.
Yeah, and I mean, and some of that's performative. And you know, I don't know. Look, I that must be unbelievably frustrating. And whether it's a little hypocritical or not doesn't really bother me because the hypocrisy is all around us all the time.
Well, you know, I mentioned earlier I would take my shot at James Franklin, and here it is when he was asked in his last Meet the Press question after question about the spring portal, and he gives out the quote that it would be in everyone's best interest to remove the spring portal. Well, you know what? I disagree about it being in everybody's best interest. I don't think it's in J.B. Nelson's best interest or Tamir Robinson's best interest. I think you may not know until the spring what your role on the team is. As a player,
I could offer a counterpoint and say
yeah, go ahead.
Teaching those guys the value of commitment and allowing them to get an education and a degree from Penn State actually is in their best interests. Like, just giving your kid candy or your dog scraps from the table that's going to make them sick later. Like, that's not good parenting. Okay.
Well, at this point though, Chris, these guys are now, they're adults making decisions that I will say that James Franklin has done a pretty good job at expressing those thoughts to his players. And I think effectively so. There's some argument about there are players that would have been better off football-wise moving on, but have stuck around because of the culture at Penn State, the emphasis on education, on the other things. And, you know, but Bo Prabula is probably the best example. He stuck around when he knew he would be backing up Drew Aller for a couple of years.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. And, but he still had the freedom eventually to move on because I don't think Penn State blamed him at all.
He knew that Cooper Cousins existed. He knew they were going to look at other guards in the transfer portal. He knew Alex Birchmeier was on the roster. So listen, I understand what I just said maybe comes across as kind of arrogant or patrician or whatever. I don't mean that. I don't think it's insane or even especially hypocritical for James Franklin to say, like, we could still give all of these players opportunity to be mobile and rein this thing in substantially from where it is and still be very fair in the way that we deploy it. And I just don't have a whole lot of sympathy for there just being no guardrails. There are consequences in life. That's the way it works. And I think just suggesting that maybe we have a little bit more than we have now, which is none, is not like it's not exploitative and it's not hypocritical. And it's maybe there's some wisdom in it.
You know, I'm not saying that it's the best decision for these players to move on, but I think they deserve that freedom. But should there be some guardrails up? Yes, there should be, but who do I blame for that not being the case?
They're still in college, implying they still have something to learn. I can't just go to my professor and say, like, hey, I don't want to hand in any papers or do any tests this semester because I believe I should have my freedom to do that.
But as a student, I do have the freedom to say, you know what? I don't want to keep doing this at this university. I want to go to that university instead. And I'm allowed to do that anytime I want, Chris, good or bad.
Some other time we can talk about how complicated that is for real world students who aren't playing fake professional football.
All right. We will get the chance to do that. However, that's it for our time with Chris. Coming up next, Board of Trustee member Barry Fanchek. Stay tuned for that. Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? GoPSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out GoPSURV.com or call 800-519-8467.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four, our last segment of the show. And Barry, in keeping with keeping the best for last, my guest is Barry Fanchek, Board of Trustee member at Penn State. How you doing, Barry?
I'm doing great, Jim. Wonderful day here.
You know what? Don't let me down. I'm raising the bar here when I say saving the best for last, all right?
I thought that went without saying.
let's get right into it, Barry, because we only have one segment here. Those who have listened to our show know about Barry. You've served a term on the Board of Trustees. When people ask me about you, Barry, I say you're the guy when the vote is 33-1, you're the one. And when we last chatted with you, the board, your good buddies who are on the board, decided they made up a rule that said they could determine who gets to run or not. And you were up for re-election. And lo and behold, Barry, 19 people running. They only saw fit to eliminate one person. That was you from running. And again, the last time we chatted, you were on your way to a hearing. Can you update us on what happened?
Yeah, so you know, certainly we had that hearing. Penn State was looking to prevent my name from appearing on the ballot, which doesn't mean I can't be elected. It just means that it would have to be, the voters would have to put my name in as a write-in as opposed to just checking off the box. Which, of course, there was a reason they wanted to do that because that makes things more difficult. We did not win that injunction to prevent Penn State from putting my name on the ballot, even though obviously we got tons and tons of nominations and all that sort of thing. So that's why today we're running the campaign, but of course doing it as a write-in, which makes it more challenging. And I'll tell you the my initial reaction was, boy, that's going to make it awfully tough. But given the nature of this particular election with so many candidates running and, kind of splitting the vote, if you will. And I know we chatted before. I just got so much feedback from Penn Staters that said, look, you can win this thing as a write-in. And, if you're willing to do it, we will support you 100%. And that was really pretty overwhelming in the first 24 hours or so after we had the court hearing. And quite frankly, it took me about 24 hours to evaluate that. But there was so much support coming in many different ways that, it became pretty clear to me. Yeah, we're going to do this and we'll go full bore. And, with all the support behind me, we'll win it. I had, one Penn Stater in particular come and says, I talked to so many Penn Staters, in my daily life. And he said, the next time somebody says, I don't think Barry's right about this, he said, it'll be the first time. And he said, look, people know you. They know what you've done. They know what you've stood for 3 years. We just need to get the word out. And a lot of people are offering to help. And so that's what we're doing. In fact, I think I mentioned, I spent yesterday evening out planting some beautiful, beautiful yard signs around the center region, notifying people that that we are in the race. We're in the race to win it. We expect to win it. And, you know, we'll get the support from Penn Staters that will be not only voting for me to represent them, but also with their vote telling Penn State that, you know, trying to disenfranchise alumni is not a good idea. And we're going to vote them in anyway. So that's where we're at.
Well, candidly, Barry, that second part to me is the more important point. No offense to you and getting you back on the board, but to me, what I have an issue with is the board deciding who I can and cannot vote for. And it's already alumni only have a hand in electing 9 out of the, 36 members of the board. And now they want to restrict even more so who the Penn State alumni can vote for. I think there's something inherently wrong with that. Let us decide who we want to elect.
You know, in that meeting when that was discussed, and I said, you know, the idea that somehow the board is better equipped than the alumni to vet who they feel should represent them is quite frankly, it's insulting, and it should be insulting to all alumni, and it's just not true. I mean, when you look at the history, it's not, you know, the issues that have come up on this board aren't because of the alumni elected trustees. Anyway, that being what it is. The
final point on the topic, just so our listeners could know, so you are definitely running. You're running as a write-in candidate. The two things are, one, how do alumni get a ballot? How do they get to vote? And how do they do a write-in candidate?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. I hadn't thought of that, you know, talking about that. So they need to know my name and the year I graduated to write it in on their ballot. And that, of course, is Barry Fenchak, F-E-N-C-H-A-K, and my grad year was 1984. They can go to my website to get, you know, the nice instructions where they can just click on this or click on that. If they voted in past elections, they should get a ballot on Monday, the 21st, in which case they go to the write-in section and write in Barry Fenchak, class of 1984, easy peasy, and they're done. If they don't get a ballot because maybe they haven't voted in past elections, it's actually much easier now than it used to be. There's a website, and they can link to it from my website, or they can go to the Penn State Board website. And it's, I believe it's Yes Elections. They click on a link. It takes them to a screen, and it's now one-stop shopping. They click. They say they want to vote. They have to put in their credentials, you know, their name, when they graduated. You know, I think they ask for their Social Security number. And it immediately vets them. So yes, that they can then go right to the ballot and again write in Barry Fenchak, class of 1984. That's a much more streamlined process than it used to be, which is good. And so that's the process.
And your website name?
You know, I think it's just, I should know this, shouldn't I, Jim? If they Google Barry Fenchak trustee, I think it's barryfenchak.com on time, but I'm going to quickly type
it's barryfenchak.com.
It is. It's barryfenchak.com. Thank you.
Yes, Barry, F-E-N-C-H-A-K.com. That's all you need to do to get there. And it has a link. So let's get to a couple other topics while we've got you. And I actually want to veer away from the sports and the stadium and that stuff for a second, because something is going on with our Commonwealth campuses. Mm-hmm. There's possibly done the closing of several of the Commonwealth campuses as a product of one of them, Hazleton campus, before I went to State College. I'm not too pleased with that, Barry. Could you tell us what's going on with that?
Well, let me start there. There's a very good column written today in statecollege.com that some of your listeners may want to tap into. It's written by Jay Paterno, Ted Brown, who are both, you know, trustees right now, as well as a couple of other folks dealing with this Commonwealth campus issue. You know, I know we don't have a lot of time, so we won't get into all the nitty gritty. But yes, obviously, you know, there's discussion. There's likely action to be taken soon to close some of the Commonwealth campuses. One of the things that I find disconcerting is, you know, the common narrative is, well, you know, Pennsylvania is not growing. We don't have as many college or high school grads as we used to. And that's, so we got this low enrollment at the Commonwealth campuses, and that's this insurmountable problem. Well, over the last 10 years, it is true that in Pennsylvania, we graduate about 7% fewer high school grads than we did 10 years previously. But that Commonwealth campus enrollment has dropped, I think, by about 30%. So what does that tell me? It tells me it's a challenge, right? Because we do have that declining population. But there's a lot more at play here than the decline in the number of high school grads, right? The potential pool of clients, customers, however Penn State applicants, however you want to look at that, the enrollment has dropped several times more than that. So there are underlying issues with regard to the Commonwealth campuses and enrollment. And if we don't honestly look at that and recognize that there are clearly other issues and address them and improve upon them, then, you know, we can start cutting Commonwealth campuses now. And you know what? You know, 5 years later, we're going to be back looking to cut some more. Right. It's just going to be Russian roulette with those campuses. Because there are clearly some other systemic issues with regard to maintaining enrollment there. And actually, the decline in the number of high school grads in Pennsylvania is going to get worse moving forward than it has been the last 10 years. So if we saw enrollment drop by a factor of 4 times the high school graduate rate issue, what's going to happen when we see real precipitous declines in high school graduation numbers? So if we don't address all of the problems, we're going to be back holding the, looking to eliminate more Commonwealth campuses. I don't think there's any question about that.
I was concerned. I thought after COVID, where there was probably more emphasis on staying local, plus the cost of mm-hmm. going to main campus. Now, mm-hmm. you know, again, speaking from experience with my parents, we had myself and a couple of my brothers in college at the same time, 3 of us, and having to pay for college for 3 kids at the same time, the branch campuses offered a great option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And by the way, you know, even if you got my brother and I both went through Hazleton campus 40 some years ago. My niece very recently went all 4 years to Altoona and got a degree. And every one of our degrees says Penn State on it.
Indeed.
So, and hey, and it worked out really well for 2 out of 3 of us.
I'm sorry about that, Jim. It's worked out well for you too, Jim. Let's be honest.
But, you know, so I think of it as a very valuable resource that I would think more people would want to take advantage of it, Barry. And I'll let you have the last word in our last 30 seconds or so.
Oh, we can't be done already. Well, I mean, there's so many things to talk about. I know we're up against time. So I'll just, you know, the one really time critical thing, you know, folks, you know, get your ballot, you know, write in Barry Fenchak, class of 1984. You know, tell Penn State that they're not going to take away your right to vote for who you want to represent you. I think my record speaks for itself. I'd really appreciate it. And I'm willing to do it. So get out there and give it your best.
All right. That's fantastic, Barry. I really appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule to visit with us. Hopefully we'll have you on again soon. Okay. We'll see you next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Thanks, Jim.
Spring football is almost here. Are you looking for a great place to stay in Happy Valley for that weekend? Go PSU RV has an RV for you. Drive your own car there. The RV is ready and waiting for you. A shuttle bus will take you to and from the game. No hassle with parking. Rates start as low as $750 for the weekend, and you get a $250 discount for the fall. Check out gopsurv.com or call 800-519-8467.